Thank you very much. I didn't load a conflict of interest slide, so I don't have any to declare. And I want to acknowledge my my colleagues in the Cummings School of Medicine on this project. So basically, child hunger, it's also known as very low food security, is a classical adverse experience of childhood and associated with growing up in poverty. So this is an epidemiology section, but I think we've also heard about some theoretical frameworks. Life course theories suggest that childhood hunger experience could be part of latent, sort of the kind of home you're born into, cumulative in terms of the pathway of the household over time, and intersecting in terms of how it relates to other aspects of your life. And that could all affect your adult outcomes. Due to severe psychosocial stress, it's been called a toxic stressor, but also potentially its nutritional mediation, nutritional deprivation. So the interest here is to disentangle the child's experience of hunger from other markers of poverty, and to see whether or not it has distinct outcomes, and then perhaps if it did, it would be deemed to be worthy on its own as a to be reduced. So I think we may or may not be familiar with Clyde Hertzman, the late Clyde Hertzman's life course model. Basically, from birth until death, again, the concept of latent factors, the pathway or cumulative factors, the variety of intersections of one's life, from the socioeconomic environment to the civil society around to, of course, the social networks that we have, and ultimately death. And I'm going to come and try to populate this framework with this child hunger model at the end. So looking at, and often when you've got an epidemiological study, you're supposed to justify your covariates. And so this is the way, this life course model is how we justify the ones that we used. So for latent factors, we obviously have the sex of the child, and we have their age, and we have their ethnicity. We also think that one of the endowments is the parental education, and I'll be speaking mostly of the mother's level of education. Low birth weight actually figures in the outcomes I'm talking about in the literature, and we did examine them, but you won't be seeing them again because they really didn't contribute. Cumulatively, what we've done is in order to separate the issue of child hunger from income-related poverty is we created a measure called permanent income, and this is done by economists. And permanent income is your average income over time, so it's kind of a mean, and that's created. Home ownership. The renter status is actually a unique disadvantage found in most food insecurity studies, and so that would be another kind of pathway. Urban-rural residents. Again, there are different places. This is a conference about where you live. Self-reported health. And, again, we know how robust that is and how that actually follows along your pathway. Ethnicity reappears because depending on ethnicity, and in Canada we focus a lot on our Indigenous or Aboriginal population, that is actually part of your cumulative pathway of risk. And then lone mother-led households, very, very important determinant of child poverty, but also of also food insecurity. There are also shocks that occur along the pathway. These are the acute stresses, and so it could be as well that childhood hunger experience represents a particular nadir in a household's trajectory, so it could be a shock. Another shock is the change in household composition related perhaps to dissolution of families. So that's kind of the justification for the variables that are used. And then I've created here for two what we call socio-adaptive outcomes. So the kind of outcomes that talk about these sort of important life social determinants. So what education do you attain, and the issues of early fertility. I would say that I've already talked about from the same data set, which I'll explain in a moment, the long-term health outcomes as well as suicide ideation and depression. So the objective here is to model the contribution of the child hunger experience to subsequent high school graduation and early pregnancy in consideration of other indicators of child poverty. So is my sound okay? Because it's hard to know. Thank you. So I'm using a spectacular data set. It's called the Canadian National Longitudinal Survey of Children and Youth. This survey originated in 1992. I was actually part of the planning group in 1992, where we wanted to have a pretty well a corresponding survey to the Longitudinal Survey of Children and Youth in the United States. And I was given one question on the food insecurity. This is, of course, before the days of the Household Food Security Survey module and other measures. And so you'll see that there's only one question on this survey: has your child ever experienced hunger because there's no food in the house or money to buy food? Yes or no? So that's the question. There are very much other rich outcome and covariate data from all aspects of the social and the educational and the health life of the child. This is a study, again, that initiated in 1994, and there were 16 years of follow-up, ending in 2009-2010. And the longitudinal cohort represents over 15,000, almost 15,500 children. So what I'm going to be talking about is the basic logistic regression for yes-no on some of these outcomes. And basically this cycle 1 to cycle 7 period, the first 14 years, were basic exposures. And the outcomes are derived primarily from the 8th cycle, but obviously you could drop out of high school in cycle 6 or in cycle 7, you could have a child. So I'm going to summarize the results because they're quite complex, and then I will show you them. So the prevalence of experiencing child hunger in this cohort was 5.7%. The mean age of the children after 16 years of follow-up was 20 years, so nice age to see them emerging into adulthood. We did find that child hunger was predictive of high school dropout with almost a twofold increase in a model that controlled for many other poverty indicators. However, early pregnancy outcomes for both men and women were significantly associated with poverty markers, but not with the child hunger experience. So the basic socio-demographics of this cohort. So children that were ever hungry, there were 768 of them. And again, I think it's a very, very rich resource for this very low food security group to have such a large cohort to follow over 16 years. You can see that there, the main differences between the ever-hungry and the never-hungry children were the permanent household income being significantly lower, the mother's level of education being significantly lower, living in this always-rented situation, ever-living with a lone parent, and consequently, of course, the number of parents changing. The way that we did our ethnicity breakdown would be Aboriginal status, Canadians by birth, and Canadians by naturalization that would take on many of our visible minorities. And you see there was a significant difference between the ever-hungry child and those that were never hungry. So simple bivariate analysis looking at the variety of outcomes show that for the fertility outcomes, we had three: that you've been pregnant or you've gotten someone pregnant, that you are female and you became pregnant, and that you actually had a birth, ever had a child. So you can see again quite a strong significance for higher early fertility, both male and female, in terms of those who were ever hungry than those who were never hungry. So for the education level, you can also see that high school leavers were significantly higher among the high school, among the ever-hungry children. And it looks as if my very bottom of my slide is missing. And so the second outcome I used in terms of educational attainment was, if you finished high school, what was the relative risk of going on to any type of higher education? And in fact, there was no difference. In this bivariate, there was actually a significant difference. So sorry, that's been cut off at the bottom. So let's look at this regression model for education outcomes. So as you can see, everything lights up in terms of poverty markers, signaling that a child will drop out of high school. So we see, as we would expect, that it's mostly the male, it's be more often the male child, it'd be the houses, homes with the lowest income, and then the mother's education is very much determinative of whether or not her child is going to make it to finish high school. Even the urban should not be lit up there. The renter status as well is has almost got a twofold prediction, and then ever living with a lone mother. But even despite all of these factors being controlled for, ever hungry continues to be quite a substantial risk, 1.8% increase in not completing high school. So as I was mentioning, what happens though in terms of if a child actually finishes high school from that kind of disadvantage, is there actually a risk for them not being able to go on to any type of higher education, which is actually where the employment and labor force participation gains are going to be made. And here you can see that perhaps it's unique for Canada, that is actually, if you make it through high school, really the only thing that is going to be stopping you from some other post-secondary education is really the household income, because unfortunately we still have some tuition barriers to accessing higher education. A little bit less, there's still an effect of mother's education. PMK, sorry I didn't change it, it stands for the person most knowledgeable of the child, and that's usually the mother. So the bottom line here is that Ever Hungry did not actually have any predictive factor on whether or not a child that graduated from high school would in fact move on to higher education. Looking at the three fertility outcomes here, you can see that Ever Hungry doesn't predict anything. It never came up. That in fact, if you go to the very bottom, the most important finding of this slide is that always rented, and really high odds ratios here between 2.7 and 4 for having a child. Living in a neighborhood and renting where there's, as a renter, that's your number one risk for early fertility and for women actually having a child. The other things are important. Maternal education cannot be underestimated as being extremely important for a pregnancy. Did not predict, interestingly enough, whether or not the pregnant girl would go on to have a child, which means that that was not a factor in abortion as a choice. And really, the income was part of it. So the big picture here is that this type of disadvantage, the hunger disadvantage, does not seem to affect early fertility, but we did have one of our indicators, the notion of always being rented, as being a big item. So, with hunger being significant for high school dropout, the question is what might be the effects? So, does hunger have a direct effect on learning? And certainly those that are proponents of children's breakfast programs think it does. But it's likely as well that there's a toxic stress. And some of the work that we did to find that there was higher suicide ideation and depression, and in fact with a generalized estimating equation in terms of age, we were able to show that childhood hunger blunts the normal age change in depression as adolescents grow older. As adolescents get older, they usually have a reduction in their depression and suicide ideation, but it's completely blunted, showing that there may or may not be a biological embedding of toxic stress. So the question is executive function affected in these children? But when you see that they actually can go on to higher education, it may not be so. Other early studies we did showed absenteeism, that these were children that may not even be disruptive in class, they're just not in class. And so that might have been affecting them. So that's an important sort of way of sort of interrogating this outcome. If youth finish high school, however, there's no reason for them not to continue to post-secondary education if they can be provided some threshold of funds that will support them to do that. And again, we're not the first. Everyone knows that high school is a critical threshold for life chances and life performance. The fertility story, always rented, is an implication of neighborhood, these rental neighborhoods. And it seems to be a very powerful determinant of early fertility and a very powerful determinant of early birth. And so we thought that we were being unique because we did ask boys if they got someone pregnant, and yes, they can answer that. And there was actually pretty good reciprocity in terms of our survey. So going back to the life course model, looking at these outcomes of educational attainment and early fertility, it looks as if hunger is actually playing a role in that pathway, but it also seems to be an intersecting part of that whole environment of the household. Rental status as well is highly intersecting in that continuum. And so that's sort of maybe one way of sort of looking at how this this adverse childhood experience, in fact, can be bad for outcomes. So, and we conclude then that childhood hunger, or the experience of childhood hunger, it does seem to be an independent risk factor for high school dropout, over and above other markers of child poverty. And the prevention of children from living in very low food security circumstances is of paramount importance. And this one is actually fixable. We need to remedy these circumstances early in the schooling time period. That could actually easily be an important avenue to improving educational outcomes and subsequent life chances. I tried to look at labor force outcomes, but this cohort is a little bit too young to actually be established in the workforce, so I couldn't determine my food insecurity outcomes at this point. Living in rental accommodation, I mean, we've been constantly adding it in as being part of like the yes, that's one of the risk factors, etc. But I think we really need to understand how important neighborhoods are. And those are also something that can be mitigated, and how that brings a unique risk to early fertility, and how we could use strategies for that. So this was funded by the Canadian Institute of Health Research, and I just wanted to acknowledge my sponsors. Thank you very much.
Let's give them a big hand.